This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to the Daily Digest on The Bigger Picture with Tina Camellia, Juliet Jacobs and Kelly Anissa. Earlier, we discussed the tragic death of Siti Masita, but no less appalling is the story of Adelina Sau. But before we get into that, just a quick update on our Twitter poll, Juliet.
Yeah, so we were asking you, can social media be a useful tool when it comes to assisting in cases such as Masita's, of missing children? So we're just asking you yes or no. And so far, about 94% of you have said yes, and 6% of you have said no. We also got a couple of messages on WhatsApp. Somebody has said, you should have a form of registration for all undocumented first until the government can decide how they want to handle these matters. And Tan Kee Loon has said that he's following this case very, very closely. You know, it was such a brutal case. It almost seems like it's out of a horror movie. It was a truly tragic and, you know, horrific case. And he also said, however, to my disappointment, there has been very limited news about this. Well, that's why we're covering it. Mm-hmm. And we hope that, you know, justice is served in as best as it can.
Yeah. So you can join the conversation today. You can tweet us at BFM Radio, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, or even call us at 03-7733-2900.
So our second story, of course, is about Adelina Sau. So on February the 11th last year, she was allegedly abused by her employers and she died from injuries at the Bukit Mertajam Hospital. Before she was rescued from her employers, though, she was spotted by her neighbours, sleeping next to the neighbours, to her employer's Rottweiler. And that actually went on for something like 2 months, apparently. And they also noticed, or they could see, you know, from their own homes, the neighbors, of course, could actually see wounds on her hands and her legs. And so this poor young girl, we're going to find out more about her after this, but this poor young girl basically had been tortured for a very, very long time. And I use the word torture because she was deprived of food. She was, made to sleep with the dog outside, and she was not even paid her wages. So earlier today, I actually spoke to Prema Arison, who is a program manager with Naganita, an organization that has long been working to protect and promote the rights of women, and especially migrants and refugees. So we spoke about Adelina's case, which is sadly not an isolated one. And here's my conversation with her. If you could just remind us about Adelina's story, you know, what transpired, what actually happened.
Well, Adelina, she died in Bukit Mertajam. Yeah? Mm-hmm. She was so brutally and severely abused by the employer. And actually, she was found with severe injuries on her head and face and infected wounds on her hands and legs. And Adelina, actually, she's from a remote village in East Nusa Tenggara province, was only 20 years of age. Mm-hmm. And her family claims that there was a recruiter who falsified documents to make it look like she was like 6 years older than her actual age, you know?
Right.
And Miss Sally Alexander, who is a member of Tenaganita, a team in Penang, met with Adelina when she was brought by the employer's family to the police station. Mm-hmm. So according to Sally, the parents of the family, Adelina, was too afraid to say where she was from in the presence of employer's family. Meaning to say, when Sally was there, like asking Adelina, hey, where you're from, and asking her question, whether even to the extent of like asking her, do you want a drink? But she will always look at the employer to give her permission, you know, right, to say that you can have that kind of fear that we saw. I mean, according to Sally, she saw that kind of fear in Adelina's, face. Mm-hmm. Sally expressed that she has never seen anyone so fearful. Sally also told us that it was obvious that Adelina required medical attention. Mm-hmm. In this matter, we really applaud the police officers who assisted Adelina and made arrangements for her to be transported to the nearest hospital. So we like to thank police, you know, at that point of time. Mm-hmm. It helped us. And on the following morning, that is the Sunday, Adelina was in a lot of discomfort. And when Sally returned from lunch, Adelina was unresponsive. And immediately she called the ward. I mean, Sally called the ward doctor, mm-hmm, the medical staff, who worked very hard for several hours to try and save Adelina. But sadly, Adelina died in a hospital less than 24 hours after getting assistance.
Right.
If she had not received that assistance, she could have quietly passed away while sleeping on the porch next to family dog.
Yeah, because when she was found, the neighbors had spotted her being forced to sleep next to the employee's dog, and there was bruises all over her, right? I mean, that was just visible from the neighbors themselves.
Yeah, but I think if someone or the neighbor would have notified this in the earlier stage, mm-hmm. it might have saved her life.
Right. So, in the year that has passed, have we seen any progress at all in this case?
What we have seen is Adelina's employer, mm-hmm. Zambiga, was charged with murdering Adelina at her house in Taman Kota.
Okay.
She was charged under Section 302 of the Penal Code for murder.
Mm-hmm.
It carries a mandatory death penalty upon conviction, which is not bailable.
Mm-hmm.
Her daughter was also charged under Section 55 B of Immigration Act for hiring Adelina for employment, knowing she has no valid work permit. That means harboring her. But however, we have no access to information on the status of the case as of today. But it has been 1 year. Yet we do not see any justice for Adelina. However, after speaking to the family of Adelina, we were told that the family has received her deferred salary amounting to RM69,300 from her employer. That is the information that we got.
Because prior to that, she had not been given her wages at all, right? While she was still alive.
Yes.
And that's for almost 2 years, if I'm not mistaken?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So, I know this is a case that Tenaga Nita sadly deals with on more than one occasion. And, out of all these cases that you handle, how many actually make it to court and, see some sort of resolution, some sort of fair resolution for the domestic helpers and their families?
You see, maybe I would like to speak about the number of cases that we handle.
Mm-hmm.
The past 5 years, approximately 2,000 cases were handled by Tenaga Nita.
Wow.
And for last year alone, we have handled around 506 cases, and 60% of the cases are cases of domestic workers, with the top violations such as withholding of passports, no resting, unpaid wages, long working hours. These are the top violation.
Mm-hmm.
But there are also other serious violations such as food deprivation, where there are still domestic workers who get only one meal a day.
My goodness.
And even to the extent we have handled cases where they don't even get, they only eat plain rice with egg, that also if they're lucky. And I have a case that I've handled last year where this domestic worker was badly treated, where she has no proper food. And she shared with me that after each dinner, if they have good food like chicken or, some meat,
mm-hmm.
she will be longing for to eat that meat and chicken. So what she will do is, she's not allowed to, domestic workers normally not allowed to eat together with the family members. So after they, left the table, dining table, so she will collect all the leftover food and put it in a garbage bag, tidy it up and throw it in the dustbin. After everyone goes to the bed, after cleaning and everything, so she will take out the bag that she threw in the garbage bag.
Mm-hmm.
And she will untie it and she will dig out or take out all those leftover food, especially the meat and chicken that stick to the bones, and collect it and eat with the rice. Okay,
yes.
These are real stories that we have come across.
Mm-hmm.
There are cases also where, they are asked to squat when they eat. So treating them I don't say treating them like a dog. I think the dog even get a better treatment in this case. So there are also other violations such as sexual assault and sexual harassment. These are common. So there are a lot of violations, but these are the common and most top violations among the domestic workers.
Okay.
So cases that we filed in the court, last year alone, we have filed about 18 cases,
Mm-hmm.
And these are cases in the labor court human trafficking court and also small claim court. But and actually we have filed more than that. Around 37 cases were dropped due to the undocumented status of the domestic workers. So you know, going to the court, it's really a great challenge for domestic workers, because if you're undocumented, your cases are not taken. You know, it's not registered, or you know, they don't give priority to that case. And so most of the time, what we do is it's resolved through negotiation and settlement. And last year alone, we managed to claim 500,000, that means 500,000 ringgit Malaysia for paid wages. That is through negotiation, so without going to the court. And I would also like to stress here that there are a lot of challenges in handling domestic workers' cases. The main struggle is the existing migrant policy in Malaysia. Like, labor departments in different areas and places apply different practices, you know, of handling cases of migrant workers' dismissal. Like, so when you go there, you know, you ask for work permit to be valid prior to filing the case. So that is a huge hindrance to filing most cases involving, like, migrant workers, specifically these domestic workers.
Sure.
Yeah, however, because we are insistent and assertive, there has been cases of undocumented migrant workers filed to Labour Department and Labour Court. So most of the domestic workers' unpaid wages, I would say that, claimed through discussion and, you know, and negotiations with employer. This is only, I'm talking about labour violations, like for sexual harassment, you know, or rape case, you know, the penal code-related cases or criminal cases, it takes a different court to handle that. So most of the time, a domestic worker will say, oh, it's going to take a long time. So they just give up and they just want to go back, you know. These are the challenges, yeah.
I mean, are there laws in Malaysia that protect the rights and well-being of foreign domestic workers? And, you know, if there are these laws sufficient enough, or is there a lot more that needs to be done?
Okay. Malaysia employs like closely about 300,000 domestic workers. Okay, in the country, which includes documented, undocumented women migrants and also locals.
Sure.
And these workers classify as domestic servants. Okay, as you know, under the Employment Act 1955, domestic servant. Yeah, and effectively denied all rights accorded to the rest of the workers in the country. So as a result, many employers feel that they can subject their domestic workers to sustained abuse and torture with impunity, which sometimes, and I think tragically, is as in the case of Adelina La and many others before her. On the other hand, those who seek to free themselves from abusive and exploitative work by running away are criminalized and prosecuted under the Immigration Act because they automatically become undocumented. So no one is looking at like why they become undocumented or what the root cause of that. So from our experiences of such cases, it becomes clear that the authorities and enforcement agencies, including the judiciary, continues to punish the victim as the onus of proof of being legal is on the victim when the concerns are with the employers or the agent. And Malaysia, as you know, that Malaysia has ratified the Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women, the CEDAW.
CEDAW, yes.
Yeah, but this commitment is not reflected in the status of the country and in enforcement, specifically for domestic workers. Why there are discrimination. And also in terms like, I would like to quote, like Safety and Health Act, yeah? So it clearly say that, you know, if OSH 1994, that if there is any, you know, the employer should protect the safety and health of a worker. So when you don't define them as the worker and you're defining as a servant, of course, they're not protected by the Occupational Safety and Health Act. But we, as we know or aware, there are a lot of hazards in the workplace, like, you know, in houses. where the domestic workers are working, where, you know, they handle chemicals and all those kind of things and standing, like, you know, long hours. So they're not protected by these laws. Like, so the Nagarnita, together with other CSOs and NGOs, have stated over and over again, I would like to emphasize here, that it's only when the rights of workers are protected by laws and when domestic workers are recognized as workers will employers, agents, and Malaysian and Indonesian as a whole, I mean, all the sending country, ensure respect and dignity of domestic workers. Mm-hmm. So, which is why we applauded when our Human Resource Minister, M. Kulasekaran, recently, I think he mentioned that the ministry is proposing a Domestic Workers Act.
Yes.
This new legislation is necessary, and we have said that like many years ago, and very important because of the unique nature of domestic worker and the underlying need for rights protection based on violations we have already seen. So Tenaganita and Domestic Worker Coalition have been working for several years in a bottom of process involving domestic workers in drafting the bill, and we will not give up on that. And until Malaysia, you know, abides by international human rights standard as outlined in the Declaration of Human Rights, yeah, and in the Convention and Protection of Rights of All Migrant Workers and their families, you know, and CEDAW, it has no right to spot false rhetoric on its human rights record and efforts to increase protection. So I would say that there must be a law, a separate legislation to protect the domestic workers.
You know, with all of this, Prima, I mean, what sort of progress would you like to see, especially in cases like Adelina's and all these other domestic workers who are just treated so badly here in Malaysia?
Because these cases become increasingly complex, having one law that covers the entire domestic worker and potential issues that may arise in the line of employment, mm-hmm. needed to speed up the legislation process and increase domestic workers' access to justice.
So, yeah, that was Prima Arison, a program manager with Nagarnita. You know, the reason I wanted to talk about this case was, I mean, I read about it last year, Adelina's case, and I was horrified. You know, we all saw the photos of her, you know, sitting next to the Rottweiler, just looking completely, her eyes were dead, essentially, yeah. You know. And, you know, the day after she was rescued and taken, she did pass away from, you know, severe injuries, as we spoke about. But we forgot about it, right? The year that happened. And I think that just happens, you know. There's a lot of these cases and we just forget. So I'm really glad that the Nagarnita organized that memorial for her, you know, on the anniversary of her death, which was, you know, just on the Tuesday that just passed. And I really think that it's very, very important we remember these cases and just give as much assistance and help to civil society organizations like the Nagarnita, you know, in their work to protect these, to protect domestic workers from abuse, especially, you know, in Adelina's case, she was undocumented. Again, you know, like our first story, the undocumented people living in Malaysia just have no protection.
Yeah.
And I think most domestic workers in Malaysia are foreign women who work in jobs which society perceives to be relatively low in the social order. And I really think that there's a larger systemic issue here or root cause that contributes to the abuse and aggression towards these individuals in our culture.
Yeah, it does seem to point to a mentality of owning a person. Yeah. And I think employers have this idea that, you know, I've paid for you to come here, now you do everything that I demand. And that's basically modern-day slavery.
Exactly, you know, and but I do think we are seeing some progress, at least, you know, our Human Resources Minister, M. Kulasekaran, just reiterated on Tuesday that Malaysia was ready to declare war, and those are the words he used, on human trafficking and forced labour. He said that a review of the labour laws were underway. And there's no laws, as you know, Prima said, there's insufficient laws, there's too many different, you know, there's labour laws, there's domestic laws, there's so many different things that need to come together. And I really, really hope that the new government puts it as a priority.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, we did ask you on social media, well, we asked you about our previous story, you know, can social media be a useful tool when it comes to cases of missing children? We asked simply whether yes or no, and 87% of you have said yes, and 13% of you have said no. We did get a message on WhatsApp that that, you know, some of these I've lost my train of thought. That
would you is it the one about where on the flip side you have you know, it's not just about the employers treating the employees poorly, But on the flip side, the employees, these domestic workers, could also be taking advantage of their employers.
Yes, that's right. It was from Kamal, actually. He said that, you know, he does feel bad about a domestic helper's case. I'm guessing he's talking about what he just heard. But he treated his helper as a family member, you know, eating together, same food, everything. You know, she had her own room with air conditioning, all the necessary, had a phone, free calls to her family. But what happened was she left her his child alone at home and took almost all the gold, cash and gadgets and went back to Indonesia. So what did I get for treating them the way? It was just his luck. Well, I mean, I'm very sorry to hear that, Kamal. You know, that is really a terrible case. And I think that is, we do hear a lot of that happening, you know, like, oh, I treated somebody so well and then they betrayed me. So therefore, I'm never going to treat anyone well ever again. And I really don't think that is the way to move forward. Again, human rights, they are not our slaves, even though we've paid whatever amount of money to bring them here. They are, I mean, they are at your mercy regardless, right? You just need to protect them because that's just the decent thing to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we also got another message from Keluntan again. Money isn't everything. Foreign workers travel so far from their home and family just hoping to earn some money so their family will have a better life. And domestic workers, it's even worse because, you know, all day, every day, they are only living in a house-sized space without any connection to the outside world. And yeah, I have seen cases of that as well. You know, they're not allowed any interaction with anyone outside the family for fear that they will make friends and run away.
Yeah.
So yes, and if they met a horrible employer, imagine the mental stress. It's so unbearable just by imagining. They don't have a choice and they don't even get to eat what they want, for example. It is slavery in many, many cases. You know, I mean, yes, if you are a decent human being, you will treat them as equally as you would your family members, or at least civilly, right? To make sure that they have sufficient food, water, rest, and
even their mental health is taken care of. Like, you know, like you said, imagine if they're just in that small space for the rest of that time that they spend working for their employers. It can get very depressing and distressing. You know, I can imagine, because I don't think any one of us would be okay with living in those same living conditions.
That's right.
Even if we are being paid. And I think, I mean, I don't know how much they get paid today, but I remember when I was much younger, they were paid, I think $400 a month. Which is, again, for the work that they do and for the distance they've travelled for, it's not much. It's nothing.
And I think it's important also that the countries that they come from, you know, that those that their governments, you know, put into place very strict laws. Like my domestic helper is from Philippines, and they're very, very strong, very, very stringent rules of, you know, getting a day off. You know, their wages are very fair. You know, it's much higher than that. It's, you know, it's in the thousands.
Yeah.
And, you know, their day off must be insured, and, you know, their rest days and everything. They must be allowed to keep their passports. You know, all these laws are there, and they give them access to get in touch with their embassy if, you know, your employer is not following any of these rules. So that, I think, is really, really good. And they are taught their rights. I think that is another very, very important thing as well.
But the issue also is, of course, that once they are here, in our shores, then who ensures that these regulations are, that you are abiding by these regulations, right? We don't have, you know, welfare checks, do we?
No.
So you don't go to these domestic workers' homes or the homes of their employers, for instance, and check on their welfare from time to time. I think maybe that could at least, not ensure, but it will probably make people think twice before not treating their domestic workers well.
Yeah, so just be decent humans.
Yeah, you don't need someone to be cracking the whip to treat people nicely, right? Yeah. I suppose one final check on social media for our previous story, and then we will come to the end of the show.
Yes, so we were asking you on social media, can social media be a useful tool when it comes to assisting in cases of missing children? So far, 88% of you have said yes, and another 12% of you have said no. So,
all right. Yeah. So I guess most people do rely on social media to get some information about important cases, although we've been told that, you know, it's not certain cases don't get as much coverage as others.
Yeah.
Well, you can still keep the conversation going. You can tweet us at BFM Radio, WhatsApp 018-789-8899. And we have come to the end of the show on the Daily Digest. Here Comes the Sun by the Beatles to take you up to the 3 o'clock hour on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.